Well, they say we now spend over $300 billion a year on prescription medications. We suspect all the money we are spending is making somebody feel very good. Still, we wonder, what can we cook up to make ourselves feel good?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,002nd edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on the GCN Radio Network. Hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Larnaca who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I'm Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Hello, Jason.
Good to see you, Michael.
Folks, given all the afflictions of modern times from which we suffer, the billions of dollars a year we spend on prescription medications to feel better, and how good our money is making somebody else feel, we just have to wonder, is there something we can cook up ourselves to make ourselves feel better? Well, here to help us cook up an answer, we have two of the first ladies of nourishing foods, Sally Fallon Morrell and Dr. Kayla Daniel, President of and Vice President of the Weston A. Price Foundation and co-authors of Nourishing Broth, an old-fashioned remedy for the modern world. Sally, I'll start with you. Welcome back to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be back. I think you're the show I've done the most over the years.
I think I've had you on a number of times, and yes. I was thinking the last time we worked the show together, it was number 921, so it was a ways back there. But the subject of the show was the International Dairy Foods Association wanted to put aspartame in milk label it. So it was kind of like, here, let's sneak this on the kids and then not tell moms what we're doing. How did that ever work out?
I don't think it happened. I know that there are neurotoxins in low-fat milk because MSG is formed, they put powdered milk into the non-fat milk, and MSG is formed in the process of making the powdered milk. So that's already there.
So there you go.
I don't know about the aspartame.
There you go. Well, we've worked a number of times together. Weston A. Price Foundation, you're the founder of that. So give us a quick thumbnail about the Weston A. Price Foundation and the dentist himself.
Yes, the foundation was named after Weston Price, who studied traditional cultures back in the 20s and 30s, and to try to determine what kind of diet is going to give us excellent health, excellent dental health, excellent health overall. And the key thing was that these diets were very rich in vitamins A, D, and K, which we find in things like butter and egg yolks from pastured animals, organ meats, and certain types of seafood. So we're very big on those types of foods, but there's other things that you find in traditional diets pretty much everywhere, and one of those is broth. Traditional cultures made use of the bones to make broth. Even the American Indians cooked the bones to make broth.
So there it is, a traditional nourishment.
Right, right.
A very traditional. Also with us today, Dr. Kayla Daniel. Dr. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us. First time on the Food Chain.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Well, you're known as the naughty nutritionist, but why would anybody call you such a name?
Because I outrageously and humorously debunk nutritional myths, and some of those myths include the idea that fats are bad for us and that soy is good for us. There are just so many myths to debunk.
And, I guess that's a good place to start. And you folks are talking about making broth out of bones and meats and stuff like that. Now, those are bad fats. Conventional wisdom is that we should avoid those things because we'll get high cholesterol. Dr. Daniel?
Well, first of all, the bones and the carcass from the meats would not really be that high in fat, but traditional animal fats, the way Mother Nature made them, are not dangerous for us. It's what Father Technology is doing to fats that concerns me.
Well, and that's what we're going to be talking about today, is what happened when Father Technology took over. You know, I got a... When I announced that I was going to have the first ladies of the Weston A. Price Foundation join us today, I got an email from a professor at McGill University in Montreal who said, "You must be joking, giving publicity to this odd couple and their kooky views." So welcome to the food chain, I guess, and we hope that the good professor up there at McGill University calls in. I'd like to know why he thinks you're kooky. I'd like to know anybody out there in the audience thinks these two ladies are kooky for what they're going to be saying today, because I find what they have to say very interesting, like I do every time I have Sally Fallon on. First of all, let's start right off here with you, Dr. Kayla. When we humans are able to taste sweet, salty, sour, bitter, and umami. What the heck is umami?
That would be the quality, the meat-like quality that we find in things like a good concentrated homemade broth. It gives a lot of flavor to our food. But on top of those five that you mentioned, some research just came out indicating that fat might be one of those basics.
Mm-hmm. It certainly carries the taste. And there you are. Sally, we were talking a little bit about, you brought up the whole notion of MSG. Mm. And MSG was developed early in the last century, but it really came into the food chain after World War II. How did MSG change the way we nourish our bodies?
Yeah, this is a very important point. And Kayla was mentioning how Father Technology can ruin the food that Mother Nature has given us. And what MSG allowed the food industry to do was imitate the taste of broth. MSG tickles those umami taste buds, and so it allowed them to create foods that we normally would use broth in, but without any broth. So, for example, the TV dinner that has the turkey and the gravy on it, now in the good old days, that gravy would have been made with broth. And one of the things that broth does is provide a complement to the meat and helps you digest the meat. But now that gravy in the TV dinner is just water, a thickener, a coloring, and some flavorings, and mostly MSG. And the MSG can be quite toxic to the nervous system. It's a very problematical additive, and some people have actually quite violent reactions to it. So this is now ubiquitous in the food supply, and the long-term effects are, you know, we still have to find out. But it's pushed broth out of the picture, so to speak.
So, Dr. Kayla, to what extent, Sally says it's ubiquitous, how do we know where we can find MSG? What do they call it on the labels?
There are all sorts of aliases for MSG. It would include things like autolyzed yeast extract, natural flavorings, spices. There are all sorts of words for ingredients that can contain MSG, and people are not aware of that.
When we see something like a label that says soy protein isolate,
that is going to have MSG in it, absolutely. And it really comes down to how we have to be very alert to, I would basically say, don't eat anything that has a label. If it has a label, don't eat it. No, go back to real food, because that's the only way we're really protected.
Don't eat anything with a label. Okay, that's pretty good. That leaves out pretty much anything that you can find at the store, except for the things that are fresh and whole and real and whatnot. Wow.
Then, well, people said...
Go ahead.
People say that they don't have time to prepare foods from scratch, but if they stop the shopping and stop the label reading and just get the real foods, they'll have all the time they need. It's fulfilling. The food is better. It's healthier. All the advantages, none of the disadvantages.
So essentially what you're saying is that MSG, monosodium glutamate, allowed food manufacturers to take the broth or to take the substance out of our food and replace it with something that just tickled the taste buds but does not provide that essential nutrition that broth used to provide us. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and that might also be harmful, too. So it's more than just pushing out the good stuff. It's putting bad stuff in its place.
Well, out with the good, in with the bad.
Bad, yeah.
When we get back, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about what is in the bone tea or the bone broth that can make us feel so good. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, number 1002. We have Sally Fallon and Dr. Kayla Daniel from the Weston A. Price Foundation, co-authors of the book entitled The Nourishing Broth, an old-fashioned remedy for the modern world. Can we cook up something ourselves to make ourselves feel better rather than spending $300 billion a year making somebody else feel good? Right back.
Care from the Heart is a local family-owned business. Hello, my name is Jackie Tucker, owner of Care from the Heart. Our family has provided caregiving services in our community for over 18 years. Our doors are opened like an emergency room 24/7, where our dedicated team of case managers and home care aides will serve you with respect and dignity.
I'm Dr. Dawn Motika. I have been using Care from the Heart for my patients for many years. I'm very happy with Jackie, and more importantly, I think that she does a great job in choosing people and coordinating the services well so that my patients get what they need when they need it. No complaints ever.
When you or your loved one is in need of our care, please call area code 831-476-8316. Our website is carefromtheheart.net. That's .net. We are honored to serve you.
Well, folks, you know, for all the millenniums that we have spent here on planet Earth, we have sustained ourselves through the nutrition of bone broth, bone tea, bone soup. Even before we had containers, we used to make bone soup in the carcass of an animal. We would fill it up with water and put our vegetables and herbs in there and inside the carcass, and then throw hot stones inside the carcass and make bone soup. Well, we did that for millenniums until just fairly recently in mankind's history. Right after World War II, we discovered that we could take the bones out and the meat out, and we could put monosodium glutamate in the soup, and that would taste good, and therefore we could manufacture very cheap food. Is that a fair summation of what you folks at the Weston A. Price Foundation are telling us, Sally?
Yes, that's a very good summation. It's one of the things that's happened in the modern industrial food supply that most people aren't even aware of.
Then, Dr. Daniel, what are some of the things that were in bone tea and that can still be in bone tea if we make it ourselves that are not in bone tea anymore in the processed foods? There's a number of ingredients that you folks list in the nourishing broth book, and would you kind of run through them for us?
Yes, there are so many nourishing components in genuine homemade bone broth. And keep in mind, when you're making bone broth at home, you're going to have the bones, you're going to have the collagen or the skin, you're going to have the cartilage. The cartilage is on all those joint bones, like the knee, etc. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get a lot of collagen and cartilage and components of bones into that soup or stew, or as you put it, the tea. And that's an interesting phrase, because Florence Nightingale, for example, talked about meat tea. And a lot of people these days are starting off their day with meat tea.
Well, you know, that's been my practice for a while. Is I call it bone tea. And I like to get up very, very early in the morning, you know, before the sun's up, before anybody else is awake. Go out to my office in the studio, and it's cold and it's lonely and it's unforgiving. And I like to have a cup of hot bone tea, I call it, because it brings such incredible nourishment. The feeling I get from it is unlike any other kind of hot drink I can express. It's just so incredibly nourishing. And some of the things in it, collagen. Collagen, you say it comes from skin, and you say it holds the body together. What do you mean?
Well, collagen is the most prevalent protein in the human body. We need it to be healthy, every organ, every tissue, but we think of it particularly as skin, and that's partly the advertising, all those collagen products to help us have beautiful skin. But if we want to do an inside job, bone broth is the ticket.
Inside job being inside the skin as well as outside the skin.
Right, not what we put on the skin, but how we nourish it from within with our nutrition.
Cartilage, helping us move. Sally, what do you think?
Well, yes, cartilage is everywhere in the body, as Kayla says. It just holds us together and does help us move. The components of cartilage and then make up the bone. Excuse me, I'm getting tongue-tied here. Help us move smoothly, because if we have good, well-organized tissue in our joints, then we do bend and move without any pain. And, of course, as we get older, this becomes more and more important.
Dr. Kayla, what about the marrow?
The marrow is a traditional nourishing food, and you mentioned I was the naughty nutritionist. Well, it's also an aphrodisiac. But extremely.
And what could be more fun than that on this day, right?
Yeah, right.
It being Valentine's Day. Go ahead.
But people think of marrow as something like a gourmet treat, scooping it out with the little spoons. And, of course, that's a wonderful way to enjoy your marrow, too. And you can roast marrow bones, eat the marrow out, or spread it on bread and enjoy it. Or you can get your marrow through soup. And all bones have some marrow. With poultry bones, it's going to be very little, because those are thin, lightweight bones. But some of the shank bones will have quite a lot of marrow.
So, and marrow is part of the blood supply, right? It's where the body stores its blood-making materials, correct?
Yes, and it seems to be able to promote good blood production for us, too. That old saying, like produces like, that has some common sense to it, and it's true.
And you also mentioned conditional protein power. What do you mean conditional?
There are essential amino acids, and there are what are called non-essential amino acids. And theoretically, our body can take the essential amino acids and produce any of the non-essential amino acids we use. We need, but in practice, most of us are not healthy enough to do that. And if our diet is deficient, say if we have a basically good diet, but it's all muscle meats, and we're not doing the bone broth and we're not doing the organ meats, we're going to be missing some of those what are called conditionally essential amino acids. And that means that they're conditionally essential if we're not healthy enough to make them from the non-essentials.
And when we get sick, we're not healthy enough to manufacture them.
That's exactly right.
Healing, yes.
So monosodium glutamate and manufacturing processes essentially have allowed us to get rid of the collagen and the cartilage, and the bone, and the marrow, and the conditional proteins, and the amino acids. And we can get rid of all of those and still have the taste.
That's right. That's what's happened. So it's like a big fraud that's being perpetrated on me.
You know, that's what my thought was. It's like monosodium glutamate has been the ultimate fraud.
Yeah, it is, yes. And people get addicted to it. As a lot of people have very bad reactions to it. I'll tell you a story. I was sitting next to someone who, for the first time in his life, had eaten a beautiful bone broth soup. And he said, oh, my goodness. He said, I could eat this every day. When I eat commercial soup, I feel like my head is going to explode.
So tell us how commercial soups are made that is different than the bone broth soups.
Well, they're put together with various ingredients. I mean, most of them do contain some real vegetables, some real meat, but the actual liquid part of it is not made from bones. It's got all sorts of thickeners and, of course, flavorings such as the MSG in it.
So the gelatin that used to thicken our soups and stews is gone.
Right, and that gelatin is the components of cartilage and all of these interesting amino acids that we don't get very much of in a regular diet unless we're doing broth. And gelatin in particular is very helpful for digestion. This is why traditionally people had these broth-based soups and sauces with their meals and recognized that they help you have a better digestion and a more satisfaction from your food.
So after World War II, we figured out how to get rid of all the good stuff.
Yeah, right.
In our food. Mm-hmm. What happened to us?
Well, and there's a sense of dissatisfaction. When we eat, we're not satisfied with our meals, and of course, we eat more. And we've seen growth in obesity, for example. We've seen a huge...
Just a quick parenthetical. Is it true that they use MSG to fatten laboratory animals?
Glad you mentioned that. Yes. If you go to PubMed and put in MSG-induced obesity, you will find many articles where the scientists describe how they make animals fat by giving them MSG.
Wow.
So, yes, indeed, and that's something that people really need to know.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. We're talking about what you and I can do to cook up something that will make us feel better. I mean, we spend $300 billion a year on prescription medications to make us feel better. Can we cook up something on our own to make our bodies feel better? And the folks at Weston A. Price say we can, and all we have to do is cook up some bone tea. Wow. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson with Sally Fallon and Dr. Kayla Daniels and you. 800-624-2665. We got callers on the line. We'll get to them when we come back. Also want to learn, what can bone tea heal in our body? Do stay tuned. Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. Today we're talking about the $300 billion a year we're spending on prescription medications to make us feel better. Well, I'm going to say something that will give our good friend up at McGill University reason to chew me out, as well as our guests, Sally Fallon and Dr. Kayla Daniels. There is no drug in the world that can heal our body of infirmities. Only our bodies can heal our bodies. And that's a Michael Olson fact that you're free to chew me out about, but that's the way I see it. And so to allow our bodies to heal our bodies, we must provide them with the nourishment that it takes to do so. In Nourishing Broth, co-authored by Sally Fallon and Dr. Kayla Daniel, they list a whole bunch of things that bone broth or bone tea or bone soup can help our bodies heal. Among them, get this, osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, scleroderma, psoriasis, wounds, infectious diseases, digestive disorders, cancer, mental health, sports and fitness, anti-aging. All this from bone tea? Is there any science behind any of this, Sally?
There's a lot of science behind the components. And Kayla probably knows more about this than anybody in the world. She knows a lot about how cartilage was used to treat a number of illnesses, including cancer, by Dr. Pruden. And she describes all these results in the book. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a lot of studies on bone broth per se because, you know, why study it? There's no money to be made from bone broth. But we would love to see the studies.
Let's elaborate a little bit on that, Dr. Daniel. Why isn't there any study on bone broth tea? I mean, I guess it's something that we can cook up in our kitchen. So who's going to make money on that, right?
Well, that's the major problem. If you can't turn it into a pill or a powder or a patentable potion, nobody's going to fund it. And good studies are very, very, very expensive. It's also very complicated to try to study a food because people don't eat it in isolation. And we would certainly recommend that bone broth be eaten in the context of a rich and varied diet. So there's very few studies on bone broth alone. But there are many, many studies from the 19th and early 20th century on gelatin, which is the collagen component. And that was kind of the soy protein of the 19th century. They hoped it would be a miracle food that would solve all the problems of malnutrition and keep people healthy. And they found that, guess what, you can't live on gelatin alone. But they still, nonetheless, found it's a very healing food.
Which is the assertion these days is that we can live on soy protein alone, kind of. as long as the package is really pretty, we can live on soy protein alone. But you list an incredible number of modern times maladies. Everything's psoriasis. So there's the skin issues that you talk a lot about. Skin, you talk about osteoarthritis. You talk about let's take digestive disorders. What about digestive disorders? How does a bone tea aid in the healing of a digestive disorder?
Well, there's a long history of bone broth being recommended for healing the gut. And all of us in alternative health, of course, no matter what the diagnosis or what the symptoms, we always say first heal the gut. And of course, today we have an epidemic of gut problems, everything from leaky gut to irritable bowel and Crohn's and colitis, etc. And we have so many people telling us that they have finally healed their guts with the help of bone broth. And we have some science for that, too, and also the history all the way back to Hippocrates. So that would be number one, that we're going to soothe that gut, nourish the gut, and heal it up.
And once you heal the gut, then your body can assimilate the nutrients that you're providing it much more readily.
And by the way, those early studies on gelatin that Kayla mentioned did find that gelatin was very helpful for things like irritable bowel syndrome, colitis, dysentery, all sorts of digestive disorders were helped with by including the gelatin in the diet. And, of course, that's what's in these broths is gelatin.
Well, osteoarthritis seems pretty reasonable because that's what you're really working on with the gelatin, with the collagen, with all of those things that are naturally in the bone broth. It's there. So osteoarthritis there it is. You're feeding it. And feeding your body the things it needs to fix it. But what about something like rheumatoid arthritis?
Well, with Dr. Pruden's research on cartilage, which, of course, is one of the components of homemade bone broth, that if you're making your bone broth from bones, then that's got a lot of cartilage in it. So you're going to get the components of cartilage to help you build your own cartilage. So that's the reason behind it helping heal osteoarthritis. And then Dr. Pruden found it was, to his surprise, he found that it was helpful for rheumatoid arthritis as well. But part of my research indicated that these diseases, which are known as collagen diseases, all seem to benefit from cartilage supplements. That's where the research is. And we believe also from bone broth, which is the food form. But Dr. Pruden found it helped with psoriasis, scleroderma, rheumatoid arthritis, and many, many other autoimmune disorders. And Dr. Terry Walls, with her multiple sclerosis protocol, she's using actual bone broth in her protocol and having stupendous results.
And yet there really is no science behind any of this because nobody can make any money with the science.
Well, Dr. Pruden's science was impeccable, and he published in the finest medical journals, and it came out, but nobody was going to make any money from cartilage supplements, and it was pretty much forgotten until I revived it. But one of the blessings for me and for this book was that I did a number of interviews with Dr. Pruden back in the 1990s.
Now, this strikes me when you're talking about this study, because it harkens back to the whole notion of shark fin soup.
Yeah, right.
Am I striking something there?
Well, you are, but shark fin soup is a well-known aphrodisiac, very expensive,
okay.
And it's associated as well with the extinction of some
right.
of the sharks and so forth. It's not desirable on an environmental level.
So it's not really thought of as a bone tea then, or the shark fin
well,
soup.
It would be, but we don't have to
kill sharks for
shark to extinction. And you're probably also thinking about a popular book that was out some years ago called Sharks Don't Get Cancer. And that particular book really angered Dr. Pruden because the science was not sound and there were a lot of problems there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also using a lot of the science that Dr. Pruden had done on bovine tracheal cartilage to support the sale of expensive shark supplements.
Okay, when we come back, I have a question for you, and that is, why can't we find chicken feet in American supermarkets? Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Sally Fallon, who is the president of the Weston A. Price Foundation, and Dr. Kayla Daniel, who's the vice president of Weston A. Price, both co-authors of Nourishing Broth, an ancient tradition for a modern ailments. Just think of it, something that we did so long ago that we can bring back. We have a question on the board about pressure cooking broth, and we'll pick that up when we come back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program, 800-624-2665-831-479-1080. Do you cook up your own? Right back. Well, right after World War II, we figured out how to take the food out of food with monosodium glutamate. And there we are. And since then, we're trying to figure out how to spend all of our money, about $300 billion a year, on prescription medications, because we are falling prey to all of these modern times illnesses. What to do? Well, we could put the food back into the food, and the good folks Sally Fallon and Dr. Kayla Daniel from Weston A. Price suggested we could start with bone broth or bone tea. Now, I make my bone broth and bone tea by boiling up some bones, put some water in a bunch of bones and some vinegar in there, and I cook it up, and my family throws me right out the door. So we're going to figure out if there's another way to do this, and we're going to pick up Matt. Matt, welcome to the Food Chain.
Oh, good morning, and thanks for the program, and thanks, KSVO. Fabulous program.
Thank you.
I've got some questions on my pressure cooker, my wife and I.
Which is exactly what my wife ordered for me. She ordered me a pressure cooker. Go ahead.
Well, that's it smells up the house. I figured out a way to put it on our back porch with a propane.
Yeah, that's where I'm
apparatus.
At.
And it really keeps the steam factor out of the house. But
yeah.
I want to know more about this. Every time I take two or three chickens, put them on a rotisserie and cook them on the barbecue, and then we take the chicken apart, make chicken parts for, shredded chicken burritos the next few days. But we always take the bones, the cooked chicken bones, and put them in the pressure cooker. And what's the difference between doing that and a raw chicken? And is there any negative sides of us cooking our cooked chicken bones, the ones, that come off the barbecue, in the pressure cooker?
And that's a great, let me throw another one on top of that question, because my wife suggests the best thing to do is to bake the bones before we put them in the water. What do you think, Dr. Daniel?
I have certainly found that beef broth and lamb broth taste so much better if you roast the bones first. And I've also had wonderful results roasting a chicken, enjoying that, and then using the carcass. But I always add a few chicken feet to make sure that I get lots of that good jiggly gelatin, too.
Mm-hmm. So, and you don't get the good jiggly gelatin without some good jiggly gelatin parts. What parts do you need to get the good jiggly gelatin?
Well, a lot of the joint parts are especially good, but it's going to vary from batch to batch. And I think people sometimes get overly concerned about having the perfect bones. And the solution, from my point of view, is to put in a pig's foot or some chicken feet, and you get good broth every time.
Matt, do you use chicken's feet or chicken or pig's feet in your broth?
Well, we were just having this conversation last week, which is why I decided to call. It's incredible that you can't find chicken feet in the market. I mean, some Asian markets, but very little quantity. I think there's some kind of market cornered on that, where they've taken them, and, you know, all the processors or the food processors for the animals, those feet are spoken for, and I'd like to know if there's any idea where they go.
Which is exactly the perfect segue to my question for the segment. What happened to the chicken feet?
They go to China. All the chicken feet from Purdue and Tyson's Chicken are shipped to China. I think there may even be a law that says they can't sell them in the American supermarkets. I'm not sure about that.
But, wait a minute. A law?
Well,
oh, that'd be because they're walking around in their own filth.
I've always been told we can't get chicken feet. We're not allowed to sell them. But they are all shipped to China and gobbled up there, mostly for making soup, although the Chinese actually do just roast them and eat them as well. And we find this all over the world. The chicken feet and also the heads are highly prized for making great soup. Now, if you can find a local farmer who's doing a chicken on the farm, you can certainly get the feet from them. Contact your nearest chapter leader of the Weston A. Price Foundation, and they can tell you where these farms are and where you can get chicken feet.
You know, go ahead, Matt.
I realize that the chicken feet is this. I've done a little research myself, and yeah, I know they've been shipped away. And part of the thing is that Americans don't want to have anything to do with animals that are, you know, eating the feet of animals that are walking around in their own filth, and there's a sanitary thing. And I want to know more about
them raw.
I realize that.
And then cooking them, yeah. Pig's feet you can get everywhere in supermarkets. That might not be ideal pastured pig's feet, but Kayla is right. If you want broth that comes out right every time, that's what to put in.
We've been doing that. We've actually we just started making this this broth that is it's Japanese based, and it is, I cannot think of the word right now. It's kind of a ramen base, and it involves boiling the noodles in some water that's been fortified with alkali to make it real, traditional and authentic. But the essence of the soup is boiling those bones, and of course you have to roast them ahead of time. But so there's no problem with the cooking of the chicken bones, I guess. A cooked turkey and doing the turkey bones after Thanksgiving.
Oh no, that makes a great soup. I mean, you can either cook the raw chicken or raw turkey parts or whatever, or you can cook the bones. And I do find that those cooked bones, if you roast them a little bit, you get a much nicer flavor. I wanted to go back to your question about the pressure cooker. You can use a pressure cooker. It's much quicker. I personally am a little bit of afraid of a pressure cooker. I don't know why. But a lot of people do use pressure cookers. And that's the way they do in Africa, is they use a pressure cooker to make their broth. I also just wanted to say something on the smell. What I have found, if I am using really good grass-fed beef or grass-fed chicken bones, whatever, you really don't get a smell, or a bad smell. It's a lovely smell.
So it's kind of the other things that have, the animals have been fed. Now, that leads us to the natural question: is what kind of bones are best?
Well, you want bones that have a lot of cartilage or connective tissue in them. So it would be like the oxtail has a lot of cartilage in there. I find that the shanks are very good, the rib bones, those kind of bones.
Mm-hmm. So things with a lot of cartilage, things with a lot of marrow.
And a knuckle bone would be very good too.
Knuckle bones. Yeah. Well, good. Matt. Do you wake up with a bone tea in the morning?
I don't. We're not that rigorous with our regimen, but we do not waste our animals. So any chicken heart, any chicken fat, we're really good. We take, if we're not making broth, we're taking the chicken parts that are going to be usable and throwing them in a bag in the freezer. And
hold on. Thank you very much. Got to take a quick break. Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, we've managed to take all the food out of our food and replace it with monosodium glutamate, but here's a way to put a little bit back in. So say the folks at Weston A. Price Foundation, just cook up some nourishing broth on your stove. Easy to do. Collect some good bones, cover them with water, turn the fire on, put some vinegar and salt in there, cover it up, and let them cook for a while. How long should they cook?
I like to do mine overnight. I do mine in a slow cooker, and generally the bones go in the pot after dinner, and we turn it on, and they're ready. Your broth is ready the next morning.
How do you know if the bones have been cooked thoroughly enough?
Oh, well, a minimum would be 2 hours. Anything after 2 hours, you know that they're cooked.
Okay. And now we have a question from Alexa. I think she wants to talk about pressure cookers again. Alexa, welcome back to the food chain.
No, I actually have a statement in addition to the, she just answered the slow cooking crock pot. So, but my statement is you can find chicken feet at Asian and Hispanic markets. You can still find those.
You can still find the chicken feet then?
Yes, the feet.
Because good.
I have found them before at both of those stores.
How do you use your bone tea, Alexa, your bone broth?
I make my own because I'm allergic to sodium. So I've been making my own for years, and I do exactly the bones, soup bone, a pork foot bone, and I make it in the crock pot with a little seasoning of parsley and black pepper, and I find that celery gives it a really good flavor, and that's how I make it, and then I freeze it for when I need to use it ahead of time.
I have a freezer full of mason jars myself. Now, Alexa, if you're allergic to sodium, how do you live in a world that's filled with monosodium glutamate?
Well, I don't eat out much, so when I do, I have to monitor what I eat. And so I basically have had this problem for over 20 years, and I started doing more of the old-fashioned stuff that I grew up with when I was a child. So we cooked everything from scratch.
The nourishing traditions, right? Sally Fallon?
Yes. That's right. And by the way, you can use that broth for sauces and soups and stews and gravies. It's really the basis of great gourmet cooking.
Exactly. That's what I use everything for. I make my own broth. I make my own stews. I make everything from scratch. So, and I freeze a lot because I don't always have somebody to share my meals with. So being allergic to a lot of the stuff really brought me back to the old days of doing things. I grew up with no electricity and no running water, so I know how to survive. And I like to garden, so I grow a lot of my own little goodies in pots. And I pretty much freeze everything that I grow. If I can't eat it right at that moment, then I reuse it later in smoothies and whatever. I don't throw anything.
Alexa, we just ran out of time. Our board is completely filled with callers. I'm sorry. Alexa, you are Weston A. Price Foundation, along with Sally and Kayla. Thank you all for tuning in, folks. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Remember, Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't. Thank you, great. Kayla. Thank you, Sally.
Thanks for having us. We enjoyed it.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.